And welcome to another episode of General Nerd Sense, the podcast from Shield Wall Productions, where we talk about anything and everything generally nerdy, hence the name. And on this episode, we have myself, John.
And Jacob.
I'm a little high energy today, Jacob.
A little bit. A
little bit. I'm excited.
Yeah, we got you pumped up.
Yeah. Well, I got me pumped up because I got energy drinks.
Yeah.
But anyway, what are we talking about, Jacob?
Today, we are covering probably one of my favorite topics, which are optional rule sets.
Yes.
And part of the thing, I love optional rule sets because they are, you know, it's a way to make your campaign a little bit more fluffy, a little bit more homebrew.
Make it yours.
Yeah. And what we're mainly going to cover is not only, like, 5th edition D&D, because they released a new PDF with a bunch of optional rules, but older optional rules as well.
Yes.
So, and actually, funny enough, Wizards of the Coast actually released a free PDF for the rule set, which is pretty neat.
I'm guessing the important part there is free.
Indeed. So if you go online and look optional rules, 5th edition D&D, it throws a bunch of things at your way, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of started off, this one's a bit older, but the honor system.
Yes, because you mentioned this in our Inquisitor class spotlight, the concept of using the honor system in terms of as an in-game mechanic, because you're like, oh, well, we're on the honor system. Like, no, your characters have honor, measure of honor. This is what that system is.
And more or less the way it works is basically your honor influences how people view you. And kind of either your sense of royalty or, you know, your prestige in the world.
Right.
And I like it as a rule set because I found it a little while ago and I haven't had a chance to implement it yet. But from what I've heard and what I've seen is it can really change how your players interact with the world.
Right.
Because instead of, you know, wanting to be murder hobos.
I was just going to say that kind of puts a bit of a breaking system, you know, kind of breaks. Puts the brakes on the murder hobo parties that typically crop up, as they tend to do.
Because now your players have a reason to be honorable.
To behave themselves.
Yeah. And this can make really big differences in, like, dwarves and elves, paladins.
Right.
Because, you know, let's take dwarves, for example. They're always worried about lineage.
Mm.
Elves.
Ancestral honor and dignity and all that sort of thing. And elves just, well, they like to think that they're better than everyone, so they need to comport themselves as such.
Exactly. Or, I mean, even with paladins, because using paladins as an example, they're knights.
Right.
And what's more important to a knight than honor?
Right. And it's one thing to just do things that fall in line with their alignment so that they don't fall from grace as a paladin, but, like, that's a little vague.
Yeah.
This is a way to kind of flesh it out and be like, no, but seriously, no matter how much you try to justify this, this was still a dishonorable deed. Take your lumps.
Exactly. Now, the way you implement it's a little bit up to you. There are some preset rules, but more or less, it's kind of like a brownie point system.
Right.
And, you know, different deeds can have, like, a sphere of influence.
Mm.
And one of the ways, like, I was thinking about how to implement it is, you know, depending on what honorable deed you've done and who you've done it to, it can have a bit more of a range.
Right.
So, like,
range,
you know,
of renown.
If you help a couple peasants, you know, find their lost kid, you might have a mile of, like, range on that honor.
Just like, oh, you found the so-and-so's boy. How very nice of you.
You slay a dragon for a king, you have, like,
you are the dragon slayer.
Exactly.
You slay a dragon for the king and make a point like, no, I don't need payment. Slaying the dragon needed to be done, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're at least humble about it and, you know, don't come back and just, like, whatever.
Exactly.
A dragon slayer is a dragon slayer is a dragon slayer.
Mm-hmm. But it can, I like its potential to cause players to think through their actions a little bit more.
Right.
And, you know, you can see, you know, your paladins becoming more paladin-y. You know, they want to go out and, like, do good. They are actively trying to be honorable knights.
Right.
With dwarves, you know, they're trying to find that, like, ancestral lineage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
uphold the honor of their bloodline,
exactly.
Sort of thing.
Drinking contests, you know.
Right. That wouldn't, even if they lose, that depends on the manner and how they, you know, if they lose with dignity, you know, and just, like, and they're good sportsmen about it, and they'll uphold the family honor, sort of thing like that. But if they start a bar fight over it, well.
And now you're...
And elves will just become even more elf-like.
Yeah. Cocky bastards.
They will look even further down their nose at you to the point where if you just lead them out into daylight, they'll get blind from looking into the sun.
So, with it, a lot of people are like, you know, you can just use charisma, but it's different. It's, you right. have a set modifier of which you can gain or lose points against your honor.
Right.
So, it's almost like a little, like, mana bar, you know, sure. you could consider it, you know, I call it a brownie point system.
Mm-hmm. How many gold stars did you earn this session?
Yeah, but interestingly enough, you can use it to affect, like, charisma and political effects in
the
world.
Point where you could even drive the plot with it quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, you let your people loose and, you know, goal is to gain as much honor as you can.
Right. It is not inflicting them upon the world, it is blessing the world with them.
Yeah.
If they, you know, are an honorable party. This is important to mention where this only benefits certain character types. It'll still affect all character types in terms of honor, whatever, your rogues, stuff like that. But, you know, if they're kind of more on the shady side of things, don't leave them unsupervised.
Yeah.
But that'll be a way to incur party dynamics, for sure.
And, I mean, you know, it's not only for your more upstanding classes, but there is thieves' honor, pirates' honor, you know.
I was trying to figure out, wait, how do I shoehorn there is no honor among thieves into this conversation, but...
I mean, there sort of is.
Right, I mean, there is to a point, sure.
I mean, even with, like, assassins, no women, no children.
Some of them,
like,
I'd say
Boondock,
that.
Yeah. sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, he, no women, no kids.
Respected, you know, assassin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a system that more people should implement. If you want to find the rules, there's an actual full wiki page on the D&D way to implement it.
Sure.
But, I mean, with 5th Ed, it does seem a bit more like they're... Here's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some skeleton rules we've put towards it.
They're more like guidelines.
Exactly. And that's, you know, to start off the podcast with, you know...
Guidelines.
I thought honor would be a good one, just because it's been... Ever since I found it, like, a month or two ago, it's been one of my favorite
just
optional
like,
rules.
How can I inflict this on players?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The next one I really wanted to go over was the fear/doom system.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're an adventurer in a world, it can be a little bit unrealistic that you're willing to fight pretty much anything.
No matter how big and bad it might be, yeah.
Exactly.
It goes back to our, you know, character creation podcast that we keep talking over and over again, which is, yes, you may not feel fear in this situation because you're sitting comfortably around a table or wherever, but your character does. Your character is still susceptible to fear. This is a way for your GMs, for the GMs out there to enforce this.
Yeah. So there's kind of two little things that went into this. The first is just kind of like an effect.
Mm.
So the fear, like, rule is... If you're frightened, the frightened creature now has, like, a disadvantage to making attacks or abilities or using skills while it is in line of sight of the thing that makes it...
Of the scary.
Yeah. Which I kind of liked. It gave me, like, an amnesia feel of, like,
right.
you can't really act as much because, you know, you're like a deer in the headlights.
Right. Right.
But then they actually have a doom system, which is kind of like hearkening back to like Conan the Barbarian or,
right.
you know, it is that impending sense of dread.
Yep.
And the way they describe it is it's the opposite of inspiration. Doom represents when fear or terror or other forces are so overwhelming that the players start to doubt themselves.
Right.
And, you know, when faced with something that is quite terrifying, the GM may, you know, start to inflict doom points on you.
Yeah.
And the more doom points you start to get, you know, the bigger the effect.
The bigger the debuff.
Yeah. Which, I like, you know, if you're fighting an army of the undead... You know, one zombie might not be that scary, but...
If all you can see is the front few ranks, you'll be okay enough-ish. You'll still be scared, fear, whatever. But the second you get to high ground, you see the rest of the army. Doom!
Exactly. So, and you can also use it with, like, depending, like, you know, you find some carcass of either human or animal.
Just... And it's just been particularly mauled.
Yeah.
It's like, well, whatever did this is probably horrifying.
I like I also like that they added a surprise, like you surprisingly find a human corpse. Like you open up, you know, the like.
Ah, a classic skeleton.
You know, exactly. Or, you know, you press like the release on a trap and just
corpse falls out.
It's yeah.
Like, well.
You know, even the most hardened adventurers are going to be freaked out if there's...
a surprise corpse on them, yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, you're doing some Korn-esque demonic cult and you're going through there and there's just fucking bodies, like, ripped to pieces and gore everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Even if they're playing more... if you're playing an evil campaign or whatever, yeah, sure, that's kind of, you know, bog standard fare. You're going to be doing some human sacrifice, whatever. But maybe every now and then have your players kind of that moment where it's just like... a body's still a body.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, you really can't, you're just like, you know, we've been doing this for a while. I still haven't quite gotten used to it.
Yeah. I mean, part of the way I would add that into one of my campaigns, all my campaigns now have, I took it from the Dark Heresy, which is an insanity modifier.
Yep.
And the more insane you go, you gotta roleplay it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it can make for some interesting roleplay, because in Dark Heresy, you have corruption and... insanity, and for certain characters like the Sister of Battle, you don't gain corruption, you just gain more insanity points,
right?
Which is fun.
Yes.
But you know, that's kind of how I'm thinking about implementing the Doom system when I start back up my Imperial Guard Only War campaign.
Yeah.
As just a very bog standard way to be like, okay, here's the points you gain from these things.
Right.
So it's not just like, you know what, I'm feeling like I'm going to give you some insanity points today.
Right.
So I like it. It makes it a little bit less wishy-washy and just kind of lays it out right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because fear and doom and all that sort of thing, again, you as a player may not feel fear in this situation. You know, you want to be the, like, well, the hero that rises to the hour sort of thing, but your character might not necessarily be of the same mindset, and even then, it's one of those things where, like, you play out, like, as people, we play out these, like, you know, heroic situations in our heads, scenarios, like, you know, like, oh, what if this happened to me? I'll rise and be the hero. It's like, okay, maybe, you know, fight or flight, but there's also the freeze option.
Yeah. There's the deer in the headlights that,
Yeah, Brave Sir Robin didn't run away. He just stood there completely stock still.
Yeah. Which, and I mean, you could even implement, like, if you come across something that has, like, a high enough fear rating, you might just freeze and be stunned.
Right.
And, you know, when something big bad is coming at you, that can be pretty bad.
Yeah. Yep.
Also, so, you know, it can...
If you're at the point where, like, it could affect how your players enact the flight choice.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay... Like, I'll take My Last Barbarian, for example. I left off that campaign after we'd just been accosted by a blue dragon who was a little upset with us for killing her quote-unquote babies, a bunch of lizard people, whatever. I was like, that is a blue dragon. We ain't touching that. All bets are off. Run.
Run.
Kneecapped the mage, of course, because he was the mage. And you don't have to be the fastest running away from the blue dragon, just not the slowest.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the sense of impending doom, which a blue dragon probably should inflict on your players... Sure, they can flee all they want, but they might not necessarily do so in the most efficient or gainly way.
Yeah.
They might trip over their own nothing.
Or when the first part of the current D&D campaign I'm in, I talked about, you know, when Voss came across that mangled body.
I was just like,
You know, because he does not have a strong stomach. He is a merchant.
Right.
He's seen maybe a couple people lose kneecaps, but...
Right.
You know... Someone eviscerated on the sidewalk that most people aren't going to be able to deal with that.
No.
Even like your rogue characters and stuff, that's something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how that, you know, there's an actual system to implement that into the game.
Rather than relying on your players to roleplay it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I mean, it all revolves around as well, like higher doom points you have, the more willpower checks you have to make.
Yeah. Maybe even take a hit to how dexterous you are as well, because you're just so paralyzed and just overcome with doom and fear. Just, you get a bit clumsy.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, if you're incorporating an insanity system as well, just, you know, that sticks with you. And it can change how you are over the course of the campaign.
Because,
you know...
Because over the course of a campaign, should you retain the same character, you've seen some shit and some shit accessories.
Yeah. So... It's a pretty cool system.
Yeah.
Going into the next one, I actually found, so this might seem kind of a little mundane, but different ways to do initiative.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the current way, you know, roll a d20.
Highest goes first.
Highest goes first, which it can be okay.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
At the same time, the players with the highest AC are usually going to go first.
Sure.
And, it, you know, and then sometimes it just also adds in that super random element of, I'm rolling a 20.
Mm-hmm. Even Damn. Though we've been completely, we're supposed to be, it's supposed to be an ambush encounter, and we're the ones being ambushed, but I have magically seized back the initiative.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, sure, that can happen, but maybe, I don't know, if you want to add a bit more sense of natural flow to the seizing of the initiative.
Yeah. So there was a couple different ways. The first one is re-rolling initiative every round.
Mm.
It can kind of bog down your campaign.
Sure.
At the same time, it does keep things, you know,
right.
fluid.
Mm-hmm.
The other way I saw it was the alternative initiative, which is, you know, it's trying to get a little bit more realistic of a picture. It's taking into account your dexterity, your luck, the, you know, how good you are at combat, your wit. So, and how that works is it's a 1d10 plus your dexterity modifier, plus your wisdom modifier, plus your, like, proficiency.
Okay. That's a little fiddly.
Yeah.
It'd be good for more experienced players for sure.
The nice thing about it is it gives you a more realistic picture of who's going when.
Mm-hmm. And how things kind of unfold.
Yeah. I've been trying to personally figure out a way to do it similar to that new, like, Star Wars tabletop that came out.
Yeah.
Where you can seize the initiative.
Right.
Like, you know, do it off, like, activations.
Right.
I'd have to fiddle around with the rules a bit more, but
right.
I think that would be an interesting thing
sure.
for me to look into.
For sure.
Another one, which I didn't really like, I could kind of see it working, is the person who rolls highest goes, and then it goes in, you know, clockwise
mm-hmm.
around the table.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that can change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have the person with, you know, super high ACs going last because, you know.
Right. There's some times where, like, okay, that can work out. And there's sometimes where, like, it won't work out right away. It's like, okay, cool. Everyone rolls initiative, and then it goes around from there. It's like, cool. As it turns out, the healer rolled highest.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm useless right now. So the rest of you get hit. I'm going to use my turn to put some distance between me and the baddies and go forth my meat shields. I'll patch you up next turn.
Personally, I might find a way to do the alternative initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with a little bit of the, you know, re-rolling initiative. But I would do it in such a way where, you know, if a player describes what he's going to do, the more thoughtful answer, you know, gets a bit more of a modifier.
Yes.
Which, it could make a combat encounter a little bit longer, but it would be a little bit cooler. You know, if a player's like, you know, my player's sitting there and he has an idea, you know, it sparks to his head. He's going to go grab a grenade and chuck it at him. You know,
it's like, okay,
fast thinking. It,
right.
And I feel if you can reward your players for mundane things, they're mm-hmm. going to be more likely to roleplay.
Sure. That's something for fostering roleplay, which
yeah.
is perhaps in our future.
Exactly.
In terms of topics.
But
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing indeed. Moving on to the next one I really like. This one stuck out, and I was like, oh, God. I've already, you know, sort of done this in the past.
Mm.
Partially with my guardsmen and their orc campaign, because orcs, you know, they're more likely to die when a heavy stubber opens up on them than a bunch of lasguns.
Right.
But it's called the cinematic combat hits.
Huh.
So, instead of hit points, you have hits.
Okay.
So, for example, if you're going through a huge horde of enemies, like a bunch of goblins and, you know, low-level things,
right?
They each have one hit.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you do a hit on them, it kills them.
Sure.
So it can make a bigger cinematic battle easier to manage.
Right.
Which can be kind of cool, because instead of, you know, your characters, like, oh, I have, you know, the paladin in the party, I can do 20 damage and just split everything in half. It rewards, you know, like the kind of, you know, swinging into another enemy.
It rewards the theatrical. Yeah.
Which
I like that.
It's cool.
Yeah.
And then you have the bigger creatures, which take more hits.
Sure.
So, you know, after, like, taking a couple arrows, the ogre there, you know, the...
He's had enough.
Yeah, he runs at you, the paladin splits open the side of his leg with a glancing blow, and then finally, you know, the bard slingshots him in the head and kills him.
Come on, man. Clubs him over the head with the loot because he is El Kabong.
But, you know, it's... Instead of, you know, having to worry about billion damage rolls for a big battle...
Just hit.
Exactly.
Closing long.
I like that. It's
yeah, and
cool.
I feel like, I'm sure there's a way to kind of decide which one you're going to be using based on which encounter your party is going to be going into.
Yeah.
To kind of allow for more variety of in terms of encounters.
Exactly.
So the thing that almost damn near killed my last party is when we were clearing out those lizardmen before we ran into the blue dragon, we ran into a fuckload of them. And the only reason that we didn't really get killed by them is because we had the quick thinking of let's just shove this giant ass fucking boulder down this shaft and be done with it after we had just run into a big horde and had to do a fighting retreat back up the ladder.
Yeah.
If we'd just been doing it based on hits, we probably could have cleared it ourselves. But again, it was D&D or Pathfinder Next or something like that, whatever. We were just testing the next set of rules.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
One of the other cool rules I was keeping my eye on as well, they have campaign templates.
Oh, yeah?
So, high fantasy, low fantasy, gritty, and horror.
Huh.
And basically, it tells you kind of how to, like, start off.
Right.
So, for example, like, high fantasy, you know, dice pool, 24d6, higher epic fantasy, you know, you start, no spell components tackled that cost less than, like, 10 gold GP. You know, they give you a whole bunch of stuff like simple mundane crafting, simple ammunition.
Because you're building blocks for what goes into your adventure.
Whereas like horror, character flaws, low fantasy advancement, player concealed checks, you know, poison handling, slower healing, lingering injuries, wound tokens, harder resurrection.
Yep.
So I like that, you know?
Yeah, it's different from the old-school kind of original D&D campaign templates, which is a preloaded adventure. Here's the adventure, here's the characters that are involved. You can make your own, but here's the ones that we can have just pre-assembled for you. Just play out this adventure, things you can kind of knock out in an afternoon.
Indeed. So it's kind of just, like, a good start for you building your campaign. If you want to do, you know, I want to build my own campaign, but I need some ideas for how to make this into a gritty or...
Well, I've got so many different ideas... I need to leave this. I want to leave, but how do I, you know, put this up to chance? Well, here's how.
Another interesting rule they had is conviction alignments.
Conviction alignments.
In reality, alignments are, you know, frequently shades of gray, and rarely do they exist in absolutes. Morality is also relative to the individual's belief. Having convictions to one's belief, however, grants resolutions, resolute strength.
Well, Jacob, only Siths deal in absolutes.
Yeah. So, the mechanics of it is instead of, you know, lawful good, chaotic, you know,
evil, whatever
neutral, it's, blah, blah, blah. It's more, you have convictions about certain things. And, you know, for example, choose up to three ideals within an alignment. You must uphold these ideals and gain the conviction bonus to go along with them. Should you fail to do them, you lose conviction with that ideal. So you get conviction points depending on what your convictions are.
Right.
So, you know, if you're a paladin and you want to slay all the undead, you might take less, like, doom points if you're implementing that as well.
Right.
But if you fail to do it, you... like, lose the ability to have such a strong conviction.
Or to flesh out anymore, because you can... Jacob, there's always going to be more bodies. You can't really slay them all. But if you're dealing with a sentient undead, say, like, a vampire or something like that, and he's trying to do diplomacy with your party, and you allow that diplomacy to continue and you stand idly by and don't just draw your sword on him, that's when you lose your conviction, because you've just negotiated with the undead.
Yeah. Here is the example they gave, which I kind of liked. You know... Brutal dictator deposes the former aristocracy with ruthless efficiency and supplements his own reign of power. He controls the military, his own royal guard, and a spy network, you know, and is lawful evil.
Right.
But, you know, a soldier serving under the army of the dictator, he's not evil, but he follows orders and has convictions to the law.
Right. Yeah.
So he's like a more, you know, lawful neutral.
This is delving in. This is towing the line of I was just following orders.
Yeah.
Line of defense. And that's a very delicate line. We should not really tow Jacob.
I mean, but at the same time, it's a real psychological phenomenon.
It is.
They've done studies on it.
Listen.
But I like it for, you know, world building.
Right.
So, you know, because I've seen often enough where, like, every single one of the Dark Lord's minions is the same. I'm a Dark Lord minion. I am completely evil. Where, in reality,
they might look at each other and just like, Hans, have you looked at your uniforms lately? It's just, we've got skulls on our caps. Yes. Hans, are we the baddies?
Yeah. Which, for, you know, how to roleplay your minions and stuff like that, I like it, because in this example, you know, brutal dictator takes over, he now controls the military, and, you know, the military's like, well, the military still pays me.
Yeah, I'm still getting paid, and ultimately, and I live here.
And he's the new leader, so I can't, like, I'm just a guy, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, like, to which someone who types, like, well, then you organize the rest of the other just some guys and overthrow the dictators. Like, well, yes, but,
I have a charisma of 5.
I have a charisma of 5, but and a paycheck of 500.
Yeah.
I'm going with the higher number on this one. I'm not happy about it. It's just, let's be realistic here.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, some adventuring types come along. Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like that, especially for GMs and, you know, in the beginning stages of, like, you building your character.
Right.
The one thing I've noticed with PCs is if they have a, conviction or, you know, quirk at the beginning, how likely they are to follow that.
Players are, at the end of the day, rather mercurial.
Yeah. At the same time, if you give them bonuses to it, in, like, an undead example. If you reward
them for sticking to their convictions, they will be more likely to stick to those convictions.
Yeah. You know, I like the, you know, you give them some treats when they're good, but when they're bad, you pull out the belt.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have that, if they don't follow their convictions, there are penalties.
Right. It's like, listen, you've decided that this is the hill you want to fight on. You can either continue to fight on it and die on it, or you can pick another hill.
In which case, you know, you always choose to die.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Hey, epic death in battle.
Right.
Can't make cooler stories than that.
I guess. I mean, they certainly make for great stories.
Yeah.
That's a completely different podcast, though. I don't know if that's foreshadowing or not, but, you know. But yeah. There's a lot of different rules and mechanics that are definitely out there to implement. And we're not saying that these are little used. These are ones that stood out to us.
Yeah.
I do think that maybe perhaps the honor system isn't as used as
it really isn't. It's a little bit hard to implement.
Because it is kind of up to GM discretion. It'd be very, I feel like it'd be kind of easily abusable.
It is and it isn't. I mean, you can abuse it. At the same time, you're just playing
abusable
it
by the GM. If the players are being particularly, pulling teeth throughout the session, just, like, won't let you progress the fucking plot, then, like, any little infraction, just honor points down, whatever.
But that's kind of the, at the same time, that's, I mean, the GM can always do rocks fall, everyone dies.
Right, but this would be a less lethal form of rocks fall, everyone
dies.
But
at the same time, I don't know, as a GM, I always feel duty, like, if it's pulling teeth, I'm gonna just call you out. I'm gonna say, stop,
like, listen, guys, shitty.
We need to get along with the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for something like that, I feel it's very good at rewarding them for playing the political game.
Yeah, I feel like this is a thing that really doesn't happen a whole lot in campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
At least those are the stories I hear the most about. Because, again, people want to hit stuff with swords. I get it.
Yeah.
But if you have a lot of dialogue-heavy Bart Seaver campaign between the fighty bits, this would definitely, honor system would definitely be a good way to flesh that out a bit more.
Yeah.
Because you do so, it definitely would require a bit of refinement and patience upon the part of your players for you to kind of figure out the ins and outs of it and how to streamline it, just fit it into your campaign. But, you know, if they're patient with you and you're quick to flesh it out and refine it and hone it like that, it could definitely bring the campaign even more to life outside of combat, for sure.
Yeah. which I like.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you stick to your convictions as a character and continue to fight until, like, you know, even if there was no hope, but you just kept fighting, you know, you might get a GM might give you a second wind and give you some honor if you continue to fight well beyond, you know, when everyone else stopped.
And as far as conviction go, it reminds me of a story I heard of some paladin who had sworn hatred against all orc kind.
Yeah.
And his dwarf and the dwarf of the party fucking loved this guy, but this paladin never took off his helmet for any fucking reason. They've just been murdering the shit out of a den of orcs and goblins. When the paladin gets knocked off a cliff and is hanging on by, you know, one hand, and his dwarf buddy comes to help him, and he looks over the edge, paladin's helmet's off, and he's half orc. You know, dwarf grabs the hand without looking, then looks over and tries to pull him and sees half orc. Dwarf lets him go and lets him die because he stuck to his convictions. He hated orcs. Just because he's been palling around with a half orc doesn't make it did not change those convictions.
Yeah, I like that. It's good role playing.
Like, and just the twist for the rest of the party, just like, what?
Yeah. That's good, though.
He's one of them self-hating orcs.
And now, this isn't as much of, like, it's sort of an additional rule set, but it's also a campaign setting that I don't see done at all. Survival campaigns.
Go on.
So, your party, you know, you might have been a party of adventurers who was traveling along on their ship to, you know, find adventure and quests. And then you get shipwrecked. You're now in a frozen tundra.
Or wherever,
you know, desert island. Your goal of the campaign is to survive and try to get back. Things like water and food now start to really matter.
Right. You can't just buy these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've always been a fan of survival things. I feel it can generate, like, you know, a lot of good, you know, good wholesome fun as your party's just trying to survive from ration to ration.
Right. Yeah.
So, and, you know, with that, I mean, you have to do rules for how much water you have, finding food.
Even to the point of, like, can they figure out how to stockpile and store and preserve things? Or do they have the means to dry meat into jerky to make it last a little longer?
Yeah. Or even, like, your warmth or, you know, cold.
Can you figure out how to start a fucking fire?
Yeah.
Can you keep that fire going? Have you built a shelter? You haven't? Have fun.
And then you can always, like, shoehorn that into, you know, it starts off as a survival, and when you finally get back to civilization, into this, you know, remote city.
A little backwater town or something like that.
You have to figure out a way to, you know, earn money to continue to go, like, travel to your quest that you're going to do.
We're how far? We don't have any coin. Okay, time for you to get day jobs then.
Yeah. And, you know,
at which point the rogue's like, guys, I got this. It's like, you don't have any of your tools or any of your equipment.
One day later, rogue is ran out of town.
Yes, or just thrown in jail.
Well, we gotta rescue the rogue now.
Do we?
Do we, I mean?
That'd be a point where having a bard as part of that survival party would be a godsend when you get to the tavern. Just like, I can perform, I just need to borrow an instrument.
You know, his loot got a little waterlogged.
Or broken, whatever. Yeah.
He has two strings left on his lute. Play a song.
How good of a bard are you?
That's when you use your lute as a drum.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a campaign setting, it's interesting. Like, right. You know, you always see the high adventures, quests, the quest. But when your quest is to survive.
Yeah. When it's that just... It is at once open-ended and insanely complicated, depending on the context. Because when you get the missions in video games, the objective of video games is survive. It's like, I'm about to be fucking swarmed. But you get in a, like, role-playing setting, just survive. It's just like, okay.
It's a bit more like the Minecraft survival.
Right. It'd be a slow burn of a campaign, but that's the kind of thing your players want to do, I'm sure. And it's not like, you know, it's not like they'd be starved for combat either.
Yeah. Fighting mud crabs on the beach.
We all have to start somewhere.
Level one. Another, but now going back to the rule sets again, another interesting rule I found was the complex skill checks.
Okay.
Basically, like, if you're doing a more complex action, it's broken down into several sections, mm-hmm. and then, you know, each one of those skill checks is for a part of that action.
Right.
So, you know, if you're a rogue and picking, you know, a lock with, you know, four different sets of pins,
mm-hmm.
you have to take a different skill check for each one of those pins.
Right.
Or if, you know, you're trying to prepare, you know, a very quick trap,
mm-hmm.
you have to take several skill checks, you know, can I find, like, you know, sharp sticks?
Mm-hmm.
Can I find, you know, some, like, some vine or something to make right. it? And then that all gets added together into how efficient that skill is. So,
right.
I personally implement it into, you know, if you're doing four different actions, you know, D20 for each.
Right.
And then take an average.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense to me.
So,
again, it would slow down each encounter a little bit, but ultimately would provide a bit more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Even if leaving things that even much more up to luck is a challenge unto itself.
Yeah. But also at the same time, if you have modifiers and multiple things, like, you know, if a bard is very charismatic, but, you know, maybe doesn't have the strength to pick up this giant, you know, cello.
Right.
He might struggle a little bit to play it.
Yeah, to hold it upright, sure, whatever.
Yeah. Or, you know, if, again, going with a bard, if he doesn't know quite, like, if you're in a survival situation, you ask for an instrument, you're given an instrument, you don't know really what the instrument is, so you have to make, you know, a wisdom check to see if you can figure out, like, what it is,
mm.
An intelligence check to see if you can quickly figure out how to play it.
Right.
And then maybe, you know, still a charisma check to perform, but also you have to make, you know, a really quick cunning check to, you know,
bullshit your way through it
yeah.
all. Yeah. Like, yes, yes, I'm just warming up. Yep, just warming up. Just doing it.
Exactly. So, I feel like, and, you know, you can also do it as, you know, one skill, you know, one failed skill check doesn't necessarily mean you're going to fail.
Right.
But threes, you're kind of pushing your luck.
But three, this isn't really working out for you, but, you know, let's see what happens.
Yeah. But, you know, if you still roll a nat 20 on that persuasion to...
You've successfully bullshitted your way through the encounter.
It wasn't great. You didn't get a whole lot of tips, but...
You played the show.
Yeah.
You were a consummate professional.
You weren't kicked out of the tavern.
Right. You were the kind of band people go to see because you suck.
You're bringing back grunge music.
Hey, now. Not touching that one. It is ultimately personal taste.
Yeah. And then the last one I wanted to go over was animal handling.
Animal handling, which you touched about on this in the Druid podcast a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Druids kind of get that by default.
So, I like what they did here, because animal handling in the past has been, like, you know, just a skill. You know, can you command your animal to do this?
Can you ride a horse?
Yeah. Now, it's a bit more of almost like a class.
I am the Beastmaster!
Yeah, and I mean, now if you have an attack dog,
literally say, sick 'em, boy.
Exactly.
And actually tell it exactly how. You can tell them to go for the jaw, for the jugular or the nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you options if you have a winged creature and maybe you're, you know, you have close ties with the alchemist in your party, you can have your winged creature
go on a bomb run.
Yeah. Or, you know, you can have, if you have multiple dogs, you can have them flank.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you a whole list of cool feats you mm-hmm. can now pull off.
Right.
And that they have rules behind them. So,
yeah.
You know, if you flank them, they can no longer escape, and you're attacking them from the back, so they, you know, take some debuffs to that.
Right.
Which is neat, you mm-hmm. know. What I like about it is, instead of, you know, it just, you know, adding on to the druid, you can have some fun making custom classes.
For
if
sure.
you're a hound master and you just have, like, a pack of three or four hunting dogs...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That becomes pretty cool.
Well, if you're the rogue who's dipped into animal handling enough to, say, have a little pet pocket monkey or something like that, you create the distraction.
Yeah.
Well, the monkey goes and helps himself to things that are not secured on people's waistlines. A bard could do that too if people are being shitty tippers.
You're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you have your bard with the little monkey box.
Organ grinder monkey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that was a neat little...
As a GM, you should only allow that if the monkey is specifically described as having a vest and matching hat.
Yeah. Otherwise, it has to have a fez hat.
Fez hat specifically, yes. Otherwise, it doesn't... It's not allowed.
Yeah.
If your bard's going to do it, he must do it right. He or she. They must do it right.
Yeah. And I feel like you see that everywhere. It's like, we have, you know, even in our, like, our archetype series,
mm-hmm.
there are certain things that are non-negotiable.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, your barbarian can have any wide variety of weapons, but if your barbarian has a rapier, you're doing it improperly.
Yeah.
Like,
he's gonna find a way to break it, too.
And it won't be difficult, Jacob.
Not at all.
No.
He's going to use it as toothpick as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But...
And if your mage doesn't have a beard, you've done it improperly.
Yeah.
You must have the wizard beard.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're a mage.
Yeah.
And if your healer isn't bitter and angry every time he or she has to do their job, they're not a true healer. If your healer doesn't act like it's an inconvenience for them to do their one literal job every time they have to, it's not a true healer.
If your healer doesn't have a clipboard with insurance forms that you have to fill out. Oh, yeah, you're bleeding from the gut, but can I have you fill this out real quick? You know, the Healer's Guild, don't let me heal until I get a form of payment.
Right. We've had issues in the past. Now we just need to make sure you're properly covered.
I'm bleeding out! Yeah, and I'm bleeding for money.
Bleeding out, and just like, okay, and you know, go like that. Like, well, I didn't have, you know, fill out the insurance. I'm like, sorry, your insurance doesn't cover pre-existing conditions.
Do you have ye old HMO or PPO plan? Funny enough.
Meanwhile, all our European listeners are just like, what the fuck? Trust me, that's a thing in America. It sucks.
Slight side note. I was in an Eve game, and I was the healer. For like the group of ships, I was doing shield reps, and I'm like, okay, guys, before we start, I need you to submit your insurance forms to me because I can't, you know, repair your ship unless I have a verified form of payment. And everyone just lost their shit.
Yeah.
It's always a good joke to make.
Yep. It pretty much only resonates with Americans, though.
Yeah.
It's our joke, and it's fake laughter hiding sometimes quite real pain.
All around me are familiar faces.
Yeah.
I guess one other rule that kind of caught my eye.
We'll round up on this.
Yeah. Hindering armor. Yeah. So, you know, if your paladin has really amazing, you know, plate armor that just have, you know, massive pauldrons and, you know, just it looks incredible. But that is a lot of weight, and it's all on your shoulders. He has those For Honor pauldrons that are just ridiculously gaudy that have the shield breakers on them.
Yep, yep.
It's fucking made out of granite.
Yep.
That granite, he can't oil it as well as he can the steel, and now your arm doesn't kind of swing as well.
Right.
Or, you know, you have that really, really awesome Cloudbreaker great sword, and you're in a cavern. You can't really swing it,
or indeed, depending on your character specifically, lift it.
Yeah,
because even traditional blacksmiths who made that big ass Buster sword, most of them refused to. But one who did, it weighed 70 fucking pounds. They needed two people just to lift the dumbass thing. They didn't so much swing it as they did drop it on the things they were using it on.
Yeah,
like unless you are huge as a character. Yeah. That'd be a way to encourage realistic equipment, I suppose. Or even a way, like, if you've got just proper plate is not super gaudy or huge or whatever, and you take a hit to the wrong joint part of it.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why maces are nice.
Mm-hmm.
But the example it gives here is it gives this, like, more armor, like, the more, you know, whatever your armor is made out of, because it also goes really heavily into, you know, exotic armor and stuff like that.
Right.
Is gives a minus on skill checks for like stealth, you know, disadvantages to athletics and acrobatic skill checks.
Which you get enough of those debuffs, and all the enemy has to do is push you onto your back.
Yeah. So, you know, personally, paladins out there, if you want, you know, good armor, just look up historical armor.
And you should be fine, because it was.
Friendly reminder, jack chains are awesome.
I believe you.
There, it's like, so, it's literally just a couple, like, pieces, like, bars of metal that go around the, you know, the outside of your arm. So when your arm is palm in to your thigh, it's a couple different, like, jack chains or bars of metal that armor that region, and then it has, like, just a small elbow joint. And the reason for that is that's the most likely place you're going to get hit, because you're not really turning your arm inside out.
Right.
And if someone's striking you with a sword, it's going to hit those jack chains and not cut you.
Right.
And they tie nicely into, you know, Gamberson or
Brigandine or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, instead of just going for full plate, look at some alternatives, because
consider function more than form.
Because, you know, as you got into, like, the Renaissance, they stopped. You know, full plate is expensive. It, you know, it's a little bit more cumbersome. And if you're outfitting a bunch of, you know, men-at-arms...
Right, and given the weaponry of the time that was developing, kind of impractical.
Yeah.
And pointless and useless.
Yeah, so...
Function is a form all to its own.
Exactly. Now, if you want a bonus on all those intimidation checks, your 10 pounds of granite, pauldron...
Yes.
It does look... pretty impressive.
Yes, it looks impressive.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you have to have your party use a handcart to wheel you into place to make the check.
Yeah. Also, personally, for this rule, what I've seen done, and I like, whether or not the, you know, the visor to your helmet is open or closed can change your perception.
Yes.
So, you know, with the paladin in our party, he wanted to...
He's just sitting there like fucking Sir Bedivere opening your fucking visor every time. Like Monty Python, just squeak.
Which, I mean, is kind of realistic, because...
Yeah, sure. Doesn't make it any less silly, Jacob.
Yeah. So, with my current GM, you know, it's a free action, you know, to prepare it or, like, flip it closed when you go into combat.
Mm.
And if it's open, you take an arrow to the face, you're probably going to die.
Yes.
If you take an arrow to the face with your visor closed, you're probably going to live.
Depends how good the shot was.
And it's up to the player... to remember whether or not it's open or closed.
All the GM has to do is like, hey, did you close your visor? No. Oh. Hands blank character sheet. Sorry.
Don't take an arrow to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Or goblin dagger.
Don't take any hits to the face in the D&D setting.
That's your moneymaker.
It's not
for
mine.
The bard.
It's definitely for the bard. It's definitely not mine. That ship sailed at birth.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely take a look. There are, in addition to this, so many awesome rules.
Yes.
And if you're, you know, you're wanting to run a campaign that's a little bit more homebrew, but are having a hard time finding inspiration, look at this PDF. It is 72 pages, I believe, of...
resource material.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's great. And I'm going to use...
And... the greatest part about it?
It's free.
Bingo.
It's like when they release the, you know, 8th edition of 40K, and they're like, oh yeah, here's the rule set. It's free?
No, it wasn't. The fucking 40K rulebook was not free, but...
When it first came out, the starter rule set?
For each army, the indexes or whatever?
No, not the indexes. Just the core mechanics.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The pamphlet whatever. They handed out. Pamphlet. You're like...
Right.
I got it, I was like, wait.
Ah.
GW's giving me something for free?
Yeah. Wait, where's the catch?
I must treasure this.
Mm-hmm. Quick, before they change their mind, we must leave. But
anyway.
That'll about do it.
Yeah, that'll about do it.
Alrighty, dear listeners. Well, wherever you're listening to us too, be it iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever, do not forget to subscribe if you're not subscribed already. And if you have any suggestions for future topics of General Nerd Sense, Lore Council, or Loose Brews, head on over to our Facebook page, Shield Wall Productions, on Facebook.com, or...
Or hit us up on Twitter at the official SWP, whether or not you want to bring us, you know, your own homebrew rules, or, you know, just want to share what you found in here, or just want to shoot the shit and talk. I'm more than happy to do that as well.
Indeed. And until next time, dear listeners, we shall catch you later. Doodles!